Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue number 27.5. So I am one of your hosts of the day, Patrick.
I am Nat.
And Cat in Hat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Cat in Hat. So we got a lot to talk about, so we're just going to jump right into it. And I'm going to go ahead and start us off with... let's see here. What was I going to start us off with? Yes, I'm going to start us off with Skyward, issue number 4. So, for our loyal listeners, or people who just...
No sexy wolves this week, guys, sorry.
Yeah, no sexy wolves this week. But for our loyal listeners who remembered, I mentioned this in our previous episode.
You mentioned number 1, right?
Well, I mentioned that after number 3 was out, so this was right between number 3 and 4, Skyward was bought by Sony Pictures for the movie rights. It's already attached the Rampage director to it. And I was reading issue number 4, and this thing is building up in, like, a really awesome, interesting, crazy way. And I'm just so excited now. I'm so excited for the movie. I can't wait. When's it going
to
come out?
It also
had the best, like, one blurb of dialogue. Like, the story is so fun, and it's so well written. The main character, she's, like, talking with her dad, and she's like, man, I shouldn't have stuck my stupid nose in it. And he tells her, "You didn't watch your mouth. You have your mother's nose, and you will not talk bad about it."
That's so, like, it's a cute dad moment, too. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's so cute and great. And in the middle of all this, like, crazy stuff happening. Number 2, I guess I'll talk about Champions a little bit. This is number 22. We're just getting a bunch of new people on the team. Like, Amadeus Cho, I guess, has lost his Hulk powers for some reason, and a Hulk related thing that I didn't read. But he's still, I guess, the heavy hitter. Riri has new armor that doesn't really look like Iron Man's armor, so it's really cool.
Super cool looking.
Looks like anime style armor.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Maybe that's why I like. Like, I looked at it and I immediately went Bubblegum Crisis. So I'm like, yeah, I love this.
That's probably why. I won't lie to you.
Yeah, there's a new member of the team too. Who's like a completely new character who has like awesome like Spirit of the North powers.
Okay.
She can like change her body into like Arctic animals, and like has like Aurora Borealis type shit coming out of her.
That's awesome.
It's really cool. And
she's like, am I taking drugs right now?
Yeah,
no, that's
basically
normal.
Yeah, like she just like transforms into a wolf with all this rainbow colored
what?
Spell.
That's awesome.
And then not just like a regular wolf too, like she can do like like, look at this. It's a wolf with, like, deer antlers and, like...
Oh, I need this comic book
now. Jack Wolf.
Yeah, all this crazy... Yeah, so awesome. Next one I got is Royal City, number 12. This is Jeff Lemire. Just absolutely beautiful. Fantastic. Like, I'm just gonna show
Matt
and Kat
amazing.
Just the splash... the big pages and...
It's like most of the comic too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like
Whoa,
almost the entire.
What the hell is happening out of his brain?
Yeah, I know, right? It's like the entire.
I mean,
entire...
your head would do some pretty weird things too if you saw that kind of shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's just absolutely beautiful. Words can't describe it, so I won't try to do it on a podcast. beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Royal City.
Oh my god, what is that cover? I didn't even see that cover. It's horrifying.
Oh yes, this is Eternity Girl, number 5, by Magdalene Visaggio, and artwork by Sunny Liu. I was reading this, and I realized that I love Eternity Girl and Shade the Changing Woman, but they're not good people, like, at all. Like...
just awful.
The Eternity Girl, Caroline Sharp, she kills people in hot fits of hot-blooded rage, which is pretty bad because she's basically a god.
That's crazy.
So, like, and she's trying to destroy the universe, too. Like,
that's normal,
yeah.
Right?
Well, she's trying to commit suicide and can't do it, and so she wants to make sure that if she's gonna do it, she gets the job done. So she wants to erase reality so that she's, you know, does make sure that
she doesn't come back.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, not to be a jerk, but that sounds pretty self-centered of you.
That's what I thought, too. And also, I was reading this, too, and kind of thinking about Shade. And Shade is basically everywhere she goes is just, like, a LSD cloud. Like, people just start tripping balls and, like, going, like, insane just losing their absolute
minds. You literally
can't
hang out with her because you do
no,
drugs.
No, you can't. Everybody, like, and, like, all of her friends start, like, talking weirder and weirder and, like, and more, like, it's, like, really weird. And, yeah, they're just not good people. Young animal, way to step up the anti-hero game into, like, real territory.
Way to not have good people.
Yeah, right. I know, right? I love not good people.
All right. Well, I really didn't. There's a lot of crossover today, so I read one book that nobody else did.
Yeah, right. It's like I got one,
guys. And it's not even that great.
We
which
are
is
Capes
sad,
and
you know?
Scowls
like,
West.
We are Capes and Scowls West.
Do we have, like, the little brain parasites on
you? Yeah. Like, yeah, from Future Drama.
I feel like my favorite, like, a We Are thing is a Toy Story and being like, I have been chosen!
Oh, yeah.
So I read Ruin World Number 1 by Derek Laufman, who has some ties to the animation industry. He actually did some of the Adventure Time comic books. This is his first foray into his own creator-owned story and book. And it's a lot of fun. It's about Pogo and Rex, a pig and a fox, doing adventure-y stuff.
Oh my God, I was like, is this the dog thing again?
No, not. This is definitely for kids. That one was not. But Pogo is a pig and Rex is a fox, and they're just adventurers. This is sort of a reflection of D&D culture and video game culture and the whole, like, finding an item and random looting and just going on an adventure. And it's a lot of fun. It left me kind of empty. I guess there's too much other good fantasy stuff out right now that even something fun like this just doesn't feel special, and it's kind of hard to avoid comparisons to Bone, and that's really unfair for Ruin World being what Bone is, but I don't know, it's great, it's beautiful artwork, but it's definitely one of those things that I would love if I had, you know, my cousins or my nieces and nephews in town. I would probably pass this along to them, like, this is a perfect kids book and for, like, the Cartoon Network crowd, but it's okay.
Okay. Yep. It
came out of Kaboom Studios. I gotta give a shout out to Boom just because they do great work and, you know, they take some fun chances.
For kids, but unfortunately, you are an adult.
Yeah, and I am very much a childlike adult.
Yes. I think we all are here.
That one just did not resonate with me, so.
I don't see a puppy. Oh, I already gave it away.
Oh, man.
All dogs.
All
right.
Well, what solo hits do you have for us, Kat?
So I read Batman number 51. And I wanted to read it because it was right after the wedding issue and after awful things. I'm pretty sure he's not okay, and I didn't mention this earlier, but, I mean, he rips a urinal off in a public bathroom and throws it into a wall.
Wow!
So, he not okay.
Sorry, I'm just getting flashes to Walk Hard now. The two ways ripping the things out of the bathroom.
So for this one, it doesn't really talk about Catwoman at all. I'm fairly certain it's right after because he kind of goes ballistic. And you see Bruce Wayne going into a courtroom. He's going to be a juror on Mr. Freeze's case for murder. And he was the one who put him away. And it's really interesting seeing it from the side because the jurors talk. You see in the juror room, they're like, well, Batman said he did it. So, and screw that guy. He's crazy and bad anyways. And I'm like, whoa.
That's really interesting.
And the fun part is like, spoiler alert, at the very end, they're like, okay, does anybody think he's not guilty? And of course, Bruce Wayne raises his hand, so he thinks he made a mistake.
What?
Yeah. You see him, like, getting into the, like, getting to the court and everything, and him, I think he purposely lies so he can be like, he didn't do it.
Gotcha.
Bruce Wayne not get out of jury duty?
Yeah.
No, he cannot. And that's what they even said in the beginning of the comic, is he not famous enough to get out of jury duty?
Awesome.
But, you see him, like, in between him going into the courtroom and stuff beating the shit out of Mr. Freeze.
Well, and this is Tom King and Lee Weeks, so this is the same team that did Batman Elmer Fudd and the Batman Annual that, like, yeah, had me crying myself.
I'm fine!
Yeah, so.
But, yeah, that was a new, awesome perspective that I can honestly say I enjoyed.
Sweet.
I finally caught up on X-Men Red, And X-Men Red number 6 is awesome, and I don't know why anybody isn't reading this. So if you're not reading it, you should read it.
I keep going back, you know, months to the announcement of X-Men Red, where we were like so hopeful.
Well, so and it turns out that's probably pop up in our news later, but or earlier. I don't know whenever we're doing things into time periods.
Spoiler alert: when you're doing podcasts, you can travel through time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fun fact. Oh, Leander's upset.
Hello, future.
Oh, man.
But they're talking about doing X-Men Black now, and I'm like, please stop. just no more. We're done.
No, I have feelings about that, but we'll definitely talk about it later.
Yeah, right. And then I just kind of wanted to go through a few hopefully fast ones, which is Archie Meets Batman number 66. Just read it. It's so cute. You can give it to your kids. It's hilarious. It's adorable. I liked it.
And that's like I'm just looking at the cover, and that's like the Adam West Batman.
It is.
Style.
Yeah, Batman 66. It's supposed to be Adam West. It's pretty great. Like,
and it's
got
legit,
the,
like, classic Archie.
What is it? Holy Horror Culture. Horror Culture Holders, Batman. Horror. I can't do it. It's like.
they're fighting Poison Ivy.
Yeah, they're fighting. Sorry.
Holy Horror Cultures.
Yeah.
Horticulture Horrors, Batman.
Yeah.
Horticulture Horrors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not good like Robin.
Horticulture.
And then I read Injustice vs. Masters of the Universe. I wasn't really that big into He-Man, so I was like, all right.
This to me was like the epitome of batshit craziness that worked. The whole premise of this is it's the future Injustice where Superman legitimately has taken over, and one of the coolest designs for the character.
Brainiac stuff. I haven't kept up on Injustice either.
Me neither.
I don't know if that's true or not.
Spoiler alert, I don't really care on that one. I'm like, whatever.
I love Injustice. I can't help it.
I like the games a lot, but I mean, the story is really cool, and I would watch the 45-minute story on YouTube or whatnot. But the fact is they get the Justice League goes to Eternia because they're trying to find magical beings to help them beat Superman.
They're apparently the same world too, because they're like, oh well, he's like, yeah, I've never been to Earth, and that's where my mom's from. Like, you're in the same world.
Yeah, that's like, I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know that piece of history that Prince Adam's mom. She makes a Fort Lauderdale, like, reference, and I'm like, that's weird. And then later in the issue, they're like, oh, you're from Earth. It's like, oh, that's weird.
I thought they were making fun of it for a minute.
Right? I thought they were making a really bad joke.
I guess that would explain
joke.
Why, like, everybody else in the He-Man universe is, like, weird, like, monsters and stuff.
Right, and then that he's...
He-Man looks like a normal person.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way.
I didn't either.
No, that makes sense.
Just to sell toys, but I loved this issue. I thought it was ridiculous fun.
I said, I've never really been into He-Man, so I was like, all right. Justice League number 4. What drugs are you on, and how can I get some? Because I don't know what the fuck is going on.
I described this Justice League run this morning as Scott Snyder read some Grant Morrison stuff and was like, yeah, this is really psychedelic. And then he went and just, you know, started tripping balls and took some acid. And then he decided to write Justice League.
Yeah, he was like, what can I do today? I'm going to take some acid and I'm going to write a comic.
Yeah.
He went out into the middle of the desert with, some peyote.
And a typewriter.
And a typewriter without his shoes.
Definitely not a computer
shoes.
And definitely not pen and paper. Like, he had a typewriter.
A typewriter.
Okay, that's real, right?
He's like, there's sand on the paper.
he's sitting there. Yeah, the editors at DC are like, where's this? Sand on your scripts.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, and shout out to Jorge Jimenez for doing amazing work.
I will
in
say,
that
like
book.
the final panel in that creeped me out. Just the artwork that he did, was creepy as shit.
Although I love his art and I love his take on Wonder Woman, but we'll talk about another Wonder Woman issue that just blows it away. Artistically.
Oh damn! All right, and then the last one. It's not maybe not necessarily a giant quick hit, but Die Die Die. I'm not a super big, like, I'm not actually even really a fan of James Bond, so this was like, I was like, alright, set it down, walked away.
So, we gotta talk a little bit background on Die Die Die, because...
Which is important.
Robert Kirkman announced last Tuesday that he was going to have a comic book coming out the following day, meaning there was no solicits, there was no information about the title, there was no way to order the book. It just was something that was going to happen, and it was going to be in comic book stores. Now, mind you, I am the comic book manager at Griffin, and I was thinking immediately, how the hell am I supposed to get this book into people's hands? Surprise, surprise, they actually matched a previous order, so this was a... a really awesome experiment in being able to drop something without any sort of pretext to it. Like, there was no knowledge of it.
Yeah, and
he actually has a blurb in the back, and I think this is just a really cool idea, that he used to go into comic book shops when he was a kid, and, you know, it's not like now where you have so much media and so much information. Yeah. You just go to the wall and pull something off the wall. Mm-hmm. Like, you had no idea what it was about. So he was trying to replicate that experience where you just walk in and...
Which is cool. Like I said, for me, it just didn't, like, hit the mark because I don't normally care for things like this.
Yeah. This was definitely... So it's Robert Kirkman with art by Chris Burnham, and it is an ultra-violent sort of mystery, like, ops,
like, I was thinking U.S. government tale. I was thinking, like, Kick-Ass with... James Bond.
Yeah, in the U.S. though. So
yeah, like, that's what I meant.
The an American James Bond thing. And it is ultra violent.
Yeah.
But there is a cool thing. There's 10 different covers because the two characters are super bloodied on the cover with different dialogue boxes. Mm-hmm. So every of the 10, there's different words on there. But cool experiment. I don't know how I feel about that issue. It's
like
it's so violent.
I was kind of just looking at it, and there was just too much blood splatter. Yeah. And I was like, meh.
For me, like I said, I don't normally hit those kind of like spy thriller kind of things, so it was like a moot point.
Yeah,
it's a cool concept that he was trying to do. Yeah. I understand that and I get that. For me, it's not something that I was into. So.
Well, and it really only works for issue number one, too.
Yeah.
As much as I love a good action movie, I, for some reason, like action comics, I don't mean that as like a pun or anything, but yeah. I'm just not a big fan of like, you know. Like looking at a picture of a car chase, you know,
and
while a very good artist can make a very good picture of a car chase,
yeah,
right.
You know,
doesn't have the same punch.
No, I totally get it. So I mean, I guess at this point we're pretty much crossing over with everything that we
did. Yeah, so
let's do this thing.
I'm gonna lead the charge.
All right, well, so we're starting with a Vader.
Yep. So Darth Vader Annual number 2. That was really good.
Yes.
I have not kept up on the series, and you don't necessarily need to read this either.
No, this was definitely an awesome standalone annual that ties Vader's quest, the way that Vader has been handling himself between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope.
I really enjoyed the fact of how much you learned, because I never knew when I was, you know, watching Star Wars how much he hated Tarkin.
Well, and that's the thing, is we're learning that. We really, like, that's never... Well, in canon, it has not been explored, and we're exploring it in canon, and it all makes sense, and it ties Vader's to...
Your cover's cooler than mine, too, by the way.
I got the variant on this. I wasn't even going to buy this issue, and then I...
Yeah, his is cooler, just so everybody knows. If you see a purple background, get that one.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It was one of the variant covers. Yeah, just this awesome issue. Written by Chuck Wendig, who is actually a writer for some of the Star Wars canon graphic novel or canon novels. So,
sweet, cool.
Yeah. So
I think I read some of his stuff actually. His name sounds familiar.
Great ties to things. Vader's a great book, and you really, if you're a Star Wars fan, it's an awesome jumping on book for the Star Wars.
Well, it also even shows some of his stuff in his past. But yeah, it's definitely a good standalone story because I didn't need anything. And like I said, learning how much he hates Tarkin. And how much shit he talks to him, too. Great.
Oh, it ties real close to the previous issue with Tarkin as well. So.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yep. All right, Patrick.
I guess we'll
start with Relay?
Yeah, sure. Let's do... let's go ahead and do Relay number 1. So this is Aftershock Comics, written by Zach Thompson, with art by Andy Clark. And, is that correct? Yes. Zach Thompson and Andy Clark. This is a very hard sci-fi set in future Earth, where there's some sort of... I'm instantly going to get into my criticisms of this comic. There is so much going on, and I don't care about any of it, and it's like, even stuff that's very central to the comic, so there's this thing called the Relay, and it's like this giant monolith. I was getting like some 2001 Space Odyssey vibes.
Well, I was just from like, it. Halo? Wait, what?
But, and it links worlds together in some sort of like union of planets, I guess. That's not really
I heard you guys say something
explained.
About pretentious too.
It's totally pretentious. The book
pretentious
reads,
how I guess is what I want.
Well, it
know.
Reads like the Relay is important. Everything we're telling you is important, so you should think it's important. but it doesn't give us any reasons as to why.
Yeah, like, well, like the main character.
We talked about an Aftershock comic, not to be a douchebag about it, but we said the same thing where it was, we're telling you this is all important, oh, what was it, Betrothed, and we just didn't care because they didn't give us a reason to care.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Well, because the, okay, so the comic is called Relay. The main character ostensibly works for the Relay. I don't know how he does that or what his job is there, because from my understanding, this Relay is just a monolith. Like, so how can you work for, like, an object? Right. Like,
is it an entity? Is it, like...
Yeah,
like and obviously some of these questions are to be explored in the story.
And there's some.
Do they do a lot of?
And there's some guy a lot who of telling, brought it to Earth too.
Do they do a lot of telling instead of showing?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, but they tell you they do a lot of telling without telling you anything. So this is true that cyberpunk.
That hurt my head a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, it's bright cyberpunk, which is good. I'm glad like neon cyberpunk should be a thing. I actually like
that. The art is cool and the aesthetic is really cool.
But whereas Blade Runner, I think Blade Runner is always the epitome of cyberpunkiness. Blade Runner standard. Has questions that it leaves you with, but it doesn't force questions.
This was a really cool page.
Yeah,
like where. I don't know, they're using some stuff.
Their sound guns, too, like that the Relay police have,
yeah.
are straight up stolen from Minority Report. So that's really, like, weird. Like, the fact that it spins like a old, like a shotgun, too.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, what the hell? Like, that's straight up stolen. Like, how did this get past editorial?
Yeah, this, just absolutely, and there's just so much going on in it. Like, I said, I don't care about any of it.
I think it's shock value non-information. Like, let's not give you stuff so that it feels like it's really smart.
Okay, and then apparently, also, this is supposed to take place on Earth, right? They reference specifically Los Los Angeles.
In the main part of the story?
Yes, in the main part of the story. And then the very last page shows us a planet with four suns.
Well, because they've gone somewhere else. They're trying to find the
maker. Oh, yeah, I guess that's right.
I didn't realize that they were actually on Earth. Yeah, see?
In the same thing.
It's not that this is...
But the thing is details like that I feel like are semi-important you would remember if you cared about what you read.
It's just convoluted. Yeah. There's something here.
I also read a bit of the back because they had some scripts of it, which even though it wasn't, I was interested in just reading his scripts.
The core concept seems really interesting and really good, but the execution just leaves you as an audience member with I don't know.
See, feeling. And like I said, that sounds like the same criticisms we had of the last one that we read from Aftershock, Betrothed,
the Romeo and Juliet. Yes. Yeah.
So I feel like we had somewhat of the same criticisms, and I'm not sitting here trying to trash the entire comic publishing company, but at the same time, like, that strikes me as weird when it's...
Their big hook for their writers is to, like, to do the M. Night Shyamalan, is, like, to have a twist kind of thing.
Yeah, because that's what I was kind of wondering.
I'm just imagining now that Aftershock is, like, the writers are going into, like, all right, high fantasy, Earth is connected to all the other planets... Or high sci-fi, blah, blah, blah. Here's my pitch. What do you guys think? Great, fine. We don't need to see any scripts. Just go
run
ahead.
With it.
Just this run
is,
with it.
This is New Line Cinema after Lord of the Rings is announced. Yes, you have a movie? Go for it.
Yeah, send it straight. Yeah, this is like, you know, hello, this is Netflix. You're greenlit. How may I help you?
Exactly. Awesome. All right, we should probably rush a little bit now.
So,
I think we talked more about that than we anticipated.
Yeah, so then I wanted to quickly touch on Isola number 4, Isola. Which is similar, I realize, to Relay, just because there's so much going on and it's kind of, it's high fantasy instead of high sci-fi, but it is the exact opposite in its approach, in that everything, there's so much going on, but it's paced so well and, like, it's fast and slow in the best ways possible.
Scenes breathe along, like, scenes take their time, yet the book itself breezes through. You get to the end, you're like, well, but no, I want more. Like, tell me what the next part is. Like, it's
so just over here.
It's like, inject a straight into my mind thing. I need my brain stuff to have arts and colors.
I know just in our last episode, we were kind of railing against, like, two, like, bi-weekly books.
Yeah, and, we were, actually.
But if I could get, like, an issue of Isola every week, please. More right? story, more content. Can I get a spinoff in,
guys,
like, the world
guys,
of Isola?
I misled you. This is actually an intervention.
Right? This is one of those books that, like...
No! Stay
away from it. I have every cover that has been released thus far.
The goddamn title page.
It's gorgeous.
You open it up and you sit there for a minute. Just...
I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna buy this as a trade paperback. I'm gonna end up buying this as a hardcover. Like, this is no joke, one of the best, like, it's just so much fun, yet so much world building, you know.
Yeah.
Avatar the Last Airbender.
Sony Pictures, when are you gonna buy this?
My arm because it's red now. It's
like, Sony Pictures, when are you gonna buy the rights to this one? Okay.
No, I want Netflix to buy the rights to this, to do this as an animated TV series.
Oh, that would be great.
That is where I want slow down, you know, like, I don't need it as a movie. I need it as something a little
calm
longer
your tits.
Than that.
Fair enough. All right. No, absolutely fair.
Kat, you want to lead us on some other crossovers now?
Superman number one. So finally Brian Michael Bendis has started his Superman number one with it's Ivan Reyes, right? Is that how you pronounce his last
name? I've always pronounced it as Rice.
Rice? Okay.
Reyes.
I don't
R-E-I-S.
I am terrible at names. So it's Superman and just Superman, just how I like it. But the hitch is they still exist in his universe, they're just not there.
Oh, with Lois and and John.
John doesn't even want to say that.
People have been asking me about this, because I think this is my favorite book of what I've read in the past 2 weeks. And I literally, my description that I give is it's the Supermaniest Superman that Superman has ever Supermaned. It's like... The moment with Jean, where he's having a conversation and he just keeps zipping away to save people and to, like, do things, was so Superman and so core to the character.
The thing is, like, I missed when I was reading part of the dialogue, and Superman actually says, wait, take? He says, take? With a question mark. And I was like, what the fuck's going on here?
But it does add... So the central element that Man of Steel had presented us with is that Jor-El is upset with Clark, upset with his son, because he says you can do more.
Yep.
And this followed that theme. John is actually telling Superman, it's time for you to be the leader of Earth in our ascension into the cosmos. We know aliens exist. You and I are here having a conversation on Earth.
Yeah.
It's time for the populace of Earth to understand and live with that fact, and that the universe at large knows that we're here and that we need to be, like, representative.
See, that's the thing is, like, he seems to be at a very odd impasse. They're John and Lois are missing. When he blew up the, oh my god, the Fortress of Solitude, he lost his only communicator with them.
Yep.
And the first, pages, he runs through space and he runs into, what is it? The
Dominators.
The Dominators. And he's like, I can't, this is a sign. I can't leave.
Yep.
I can't go looking for them.
So it's this awesome, this dichotomy of what worked so much about the Rebirth Superman was, what's going to be more important, saving the Earth or saving John?
Yeah.
You know, like, being there for his family, and with them gone, the exploration is now, does he live with himself knowing that they're gone? Does he go find them?
Yeah.
Or is he still Earth's protector?
Yeah, it's just, I don't...
That is a pretty twisty ending.
Yeah, and then at the very end, he's like, wait a minute, I know this stuff. I'm in the Phantom Zone? I was like, what drugs did you fucking take?
Well, yeah, because that's like, there's something wrong with the Phantom Zone then.
Yeah.
And Rogalzar's presence might be the problem.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about
that. This book was, and it's my favorite version of Superman is science fiction Superman. Huh. When they do sci-fi elements to the character is when he works so well. This, to me, was a masterpiece. I'm not even a huge fan of Ivan Rice's art, and he was phenomenal in this book. The Fortress of Solitude splash page, the new fortress in the Bermuda Triangle,
was fucking great.
Gorgeous.
That was really the coolest
thing I've ever seen.
And I'm so drawn to the shape of the S on the cover, to like how it has form. A wonderful issue. I cannot express enough. Like, this is the way this, and I thought about this earlier because I've been reading some other Bendis stuff. This is Bendis on a story after 15 issues. That's like, true. After he's hit his stride, but it's issue number one.
Oh.
So it's, I think Man of Steel allowed him to get to that place that when we get to the main issues, we are out of the gump blow.
Well, that's
the
other thing is running. What? Action Comics comes out, 1001 comes out next week, right?
Yep, next week.
So that should be.
And that's going to explore a different side of the character.
Yeah, I know. I'm game. I'm in. Let's do this.
Yeah. Is Bendis writing that one as well?
Yes.
And so he's doing Action Comics and Superman, and then he's going to do Supergirl too.
No, he's not writing Supergirl. Mark Andrako is writing Supergirl.
Mark Andrako is he doing anything else or just those two? I mean,
he's doing his whole Jinx World thing. So
he's doing some Black Label stuff too.
Yeah, he's got all of his indie work that's with DC Comics now.
So he's doing a bunch of things. I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, I mean, because like. You know, two comics a month is a lot, but, you know, Brian Michael Bendis is crazy as hell and usually writes like 4 or 5 comics
a month.
He's
like, it's fine, I just don't sleep.
All right, what do we have next?
So I think we need to talk about X-23.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes, we do.
That's a good one.
That was badass.
I loved this issue.
I did,
too. So this is X-23, written by Mariko Tamaki with art by Juan Cabal.
I believe that's the last name.
Yep.
It's wow. Yeah.
So
I don't actually
know anything really about X-23. I know like her basis, which is like she's she's the clone of Wolverine, so like his daughter, whatever.
Right.
And then from Pat, I've learned about Honey Badger and stuff like that.
Honey Badger don't give a fuck.
Dude, she's really does. Her new costume with her like brass knuckles.
Is
do you see
so
that?
Cool.
So cool. X-Men Red. She's freaking great. She's like
she is.
Yeah, like she gets hit or whatever, and this and was it the telepath who can control electronics.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, gets pissed off because she thinks she's dead. She like stands up. She's like, "Are those your?" She's like, "I thought you died." "No, are those your intestines?" "Yeah." "Oh, gotta shove those back up there."
So, Patrick, correct us if we're wrong on this one, but Honey Badger has a defect in her powers where she doesn't feel pain, right? Like that's
yes. So she's basically she has all of X-23's. Powers.
I also
except,
enjoy the
yeah,
fact
she
that
has
her
like,
claws are literally a middle finger.
Yeah, that's true. And she only has one claw as opposed to
the dual plus the feet.
Two. So she, but she also
yeah,
has like
the
some, but she also has some sweet brass knuckles, which are kind of unnecessary.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean,
you
can't,
you
can't just
when you go
stab people.
Yeah. When
you, know?
You put on your kids, I think at one point they're like, put on your kids' gloves. And she's like, aw. Yeah, but yeah, she has like, there was a problem in her cloning process, so like her nerves weren't properly made, so yeah, she can't feel pain, which is hilarious.
Which explains,
like, when
she gets
hit
by
that,
a car, and she's like, that's cool!
That guy throws a literal cement truck at her, and when it comes off, she's just like laying there with this big smile on her face, like, ah, I need a pretzel. I'm telling you, she's like, her first thing is like, I need a pretzel.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh man! And then there's a whole theme about clones' birthdays going
down,
which is really interesting. It's like as clones, we don't really celebrate birthdays because clone day. What do you have like a happy cloning day or something? And then,
I don't want a cake. I want a birthday cake with sprinkles and candles and happy however old I am on it.
yeah, and of course you always gotta love the cameos of Jonathan, the actual. Like,
right.
Do you know, so with like the, so I would like to say, first off, like, this is another thing where they're giving me enough information where I don't have to like overthink things and they're not making me Google, so which is nice.
Right.
Do you know what happened with the Emma Frost quintuplets?
I don't.
Pentuplets.
Pentuplets.
Oh.
Five of them.
There's too many of them. There's 5 creepy clones that we get, and I don't know. So.
Yeah. I have no idea. I was going to ask you the same thing, because you're the big X-Men guy here.
I think they were introduced back in, like, Grant Morrison's run, but
well,
I don't
know.
Well,
like I said, they said that, that there was 5 of them, and then they went crazy, tried to kill Emma Frost, which half the time I think is probably...
Justified.
Justified.
What clones do.
I couldn't think of the word.
Yeah.
Justified, but, it gives me enough creepy that
yeah, was
I very, can't sleep this. I can't sleep at night if I read this.
Definitely, like, this was such a, yeah, just a great debut.
It was good.
I felt like, as somebody who hadn't read a lot of X-23 stuff other than X-Men Red,
I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
It, yeah.
I'm like, I don't need Wolverine. I have this.
Yeah, I kind of stopped reading All New Wolverine just because I felt like it got a little stagnant, but this new fresh start with it, I think I'm definitely going to start reading it again because I love X-23 as a character and Honey Badger now too. And,
She's pretty great. Yeah. I was like,
Honey Badger don't give a shit.
Great code name too.
It's perfect too because I can't believe it took me this long. I was actually reading this issue and I saw like her brass knuckles and I was like, oh, it's because the Honey Badger don't give a fuck. Honey Badger don't give a shit.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe it took me.
It took that long.
It's been like a year since she was introduced as a character, and I, read her. It's been longer than that. It's been almost like 2 years.
Really? I didn't realize she was.
Oh, no, she's fucking great, though.
She's great. She was in the issue number one of the all-new Wolverine run. Or, like, she was in the first story arc.
Okay, cool.
Back reading
it. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, she's fucking great.
Alright, so let's take. I kind of want to hit on Rat Queens real quick with Matt, sure. Just because we have such vastly varying, differing opinions on this. I've never read Rat Queens before. I know you and Leander are big fans of it.
I've read very little Rat Queens, actually.
Okay, well, you've read more than I have, which is a little bit. I absolutely did not like this issue. I mean, the art was so really good.
This is the Rat Queen special. It's the Cyberpunk special, Neon Static, written by Curtis Wiebe, the main writer, and then art by William Kirkby. So,
yeah. So I have no background with these characters or with the storyline, and I had no idea what was going on in this story. I was absolutely confused about what was going on in the. I mean, I guess I got that they were trying to, like, I just didn't care about, like, anything in this story. I really didn't.
See, for me, this was just a fun one-off. It was like, it drops you into the middle of the story. Things are already happening. They don't introduce characters. It's just, yeah. It's definitely just one of those fun. I loved the melding of science fiction with fantasy, where they're actually still casting spells, but it is a sci-fi world. The fact that the dragon looks like some sort of a digital thing that's coming into form when it first arrives. It's just a one-off. It's really the way that Rat Queens reads is that, you know, it's essentially you're reading the D&D campaign, but there's nobody actually playing the campaign. It's just the characters in the story. And this was that one-off where that friend, that buddy is like, no, today we're going to do a science fiction version. So all of you still have your same characters and your same stats, but we're going to go into this world instead. And that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, I was, like I said, confused and dislike.
Yeah, I guess it's probably not new reader friendly. Like,
The fact that it
doesn't introduce any of the characters, it just expects you to just be okay with what's going on.
That's what I was hoping for when I saw that this was a one-shot, because I've heard good things about Rat Queens, and I was hoping for maybe a place to jump into and get a feel for it.
Because this is so much not the fantasy element, this is not a way to get a feel of Rat Queens.
Yeah.
I could see that.
But I like the one-shots a lot, and I enjoyed that.
So maybe it was good, it was just disappointing because it didn't give me what I wanted.
Yeah.
Give me what I want! I want it! It's mine!
It's yours!
Give it to me!
Alright, well, I will lead us into Amazing Spider-Man number one. Written by Nick Spencer with art by Ryan Ottley. Hell fucking yeah. I am a huge fan of Invincible. My favorite comic book of all time as far as like ongoing series are concerned. And this was the return to form for Spider-Man. And I absolutely loved every minute. And I'm spoiling it right here. Mary Jane and Peter Parker are back together. Fuck yes. Thank you for retconning one of the stupidest decisions Marvel's made in the past 10 years. It's okay for characters to be married.
I have never seen so much of a shitty day in one comic.
Right? That's Peter Parker. His life is supposed to suck, and he has one shitty day, but it brings him back to the person that he wants to tell the shitty day about, and that's Mary Jane.
This is a pretty hefty book, too.
Yes.
I'm just picking it up right now. It's actually, it's pretty.
Oh, wow. It's got, like, every
cool I haven't kept up on anything when it came to Spider-Man.
Luke Cage and Jessica
and
Jones.
When I saw, like, how they weren't, excuse me, how they weren't together, I was like, what is this?
It's been years.
Is it?
It's been years since they retconned their marriage.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize. Oh, my God. I'm so stupid. I couldn't. I recognize his art style now that you've said his name, and I even wrote his name down. Now that you've said what he's attached to, I'm like, oh, that's why it looks so familiar.
Yeah, it's amazing when you have a team that is so good that the backup team includes Humberto Ramos, who is, like, one of the iconic Spider-Man artists of all time. this is what I want from a Spider-Man book. I want Peter Parker to be beat up. I want him to make jokes that sometimes don't land, especially for the characters in the book.
Why, can you explain to me why the Avengers hate him so much?
I don't know what happened.
And the Defenders? The Defenders hate him, too. Like, I'm pretty sure if he comes in and Jessica Jones looks like she's about to knock his head off.
I think that's just...
That might just be her, like,
I mean, that's
face.
Normal, but the Devil and Luke Cage and Iron Fist all give him a similar
I think it's,
look.
It's like, decisions that he's made have led to bad things
Daredevil
happening.
Daredevil gives him a look.
Yeah!
Touché.
Touchy.
Yeah, right.
Too soon?
I think there may have been some issues with, like, the Superior Spider-Man run where Doc Ock did some questionable things as Spider-Man, so that's kind of...
That.
And he's really, like, he's feeling those repercussions.
Yeah,
of what
but
happened
the there. Avengers seem to also dislike him, so I'm just like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, I just... For me, that stuff is like,
he
that's good.
He didn't avenge hard enough, maybe. Right. Or defend hard enough.
Yeah, right.
He makes a lot of mistakes, and his villains are the ones who lead to all these, like... a catastrophic events. That
it looks like it has like a ton of the classic Spider-Man villains in it too. Like I'm seeing Wilson Fisk and Mysterio.
Oh, Wilson Fisk is the mayor.
He's the mayor.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So
Mayor Wilson Fisk.
And his roommate, Peter's one of his new roommates,
yeah.
is Boomerang.
Oh,
so he's
yeah.
actually in.
And
he has an apartment.
And
with
he
his,
thinks he's a fucking asshole as a person too.
The where's the? oh, it's that's
he plays Call of Duty at 5
It's 5 a.m. Randy. It's 5 a.m. He's playing Call of Duty Latveria. It's when the Korean players log on. Those guys don't mess around. You gotta beat them to be the best.
That's hilarious.
And he has the fucking surround sound on at 5
on.
O'clock.
And not headphones in. He has the surround
yeah.
sound
oh
on.
Oh my god, he's that guy.
Yeah, he's
that,
that
guy.
I've definitely had roommates like that before.
This book was an awesome debut. Thank you.
Welcome to adulthood, Peter Parker.
Yeah, I actually want to read it too, and I haven't really been very interested in any Amazing Spider-Man titles.
That's one thing I really love in superhero comics when they like focus on superheroes like houses or apartments.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they don't do that nearly enough in like comics.
Oh, yeah.
Parker's
like,
always been that gateway.
Superheroes usually don't make a lot of money.
I feel like
they probably would have a roommate.
What was it? He's doing shitty as a superhero. People don't like him as a superhero. And then on top of that, he actually was fired from his job.
He was fired from his job because of a controversy about who wrote his final thesis as a graduate.
Yep.
Because he was embodied by Doc Ock at the time.
Yep.
So technically Dr. Octopus wrote that thesis.
This is too much, man.
But that's Peter Parker's life. It's just too much, man.
Fair enough.
The other thing that happened to him too. There's just like I was just like, God, you can't. Wow, that is damn.
Yeah,
like
so great.
It's gonna get better. All
right, we got to move to the last couple.
Okay,
Life of Captain Marvel.
Yeah, let's talk about the Life of Captain Marvel, which coincidentally, Nat and I also have very differing opinions.
Well, that's the
on.
Other fun part is. Me and you actually agree on something, and Nat's the one who's in disagreement.
Yes, even though we are all one here at Capes and Skulls West, we still have differing opinions.
You're right.
At this point, which is good.
I'm going to also make the small disclaimer. I've never read any Captain Marvel titles. This is the first one I've ever read.
I've not either. The only Captain Marvel I've read is in Ms. Marvel. So
I have read other Captain Marvel stories.
Yeah?
I read the beginning of the Kelly Sue DeConnick run.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-oh. And?
Well, I'll let you guys talk about the stuff that you have.
I absolutely loved this.
I liked it, too.
I thought this was an amazing take on, like, such a huge character.
I also didn't realize she had a space cat, and I was like, damn.
I didn't either.
Friends.
It was awesome. I I don't know how you couldn't have... The scene in the graveyard when she punches through her dad's headstone, that was crazy. And then, like, just... And her brother, like, gets in a drunk driving coma crash, and...
It was like Peter Parker moment, I would say, for that
There's, like, four panels where,
I will,
like,
say this, I want her hair to go back how it was in the first part of the comic. I was like, I don't have any sort of, like, you know...
Bias.
What? I can't think of words today.
I was literally going to say, I agree with you, I wanted to go back, but I loved how they did that transition.
Yeah,
like, right. There's, like, four panels, and when she goes into the hospital and she has her, like, faux hawk.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to call it. And then throughout the next few panels, you can see her hair starting to grow in. So it doesn't give you... That's something I really hate is, like, 5 months later.
Well, Tony's,
you know,
such a tool, and he's like, I can tell how long it's been by the length of a woman's hair. And she's like, or you can count.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I thought that was a really great, like, just little, like... exercise. And,
well, and that would have worked a lot better without Tony's line to actually give the audience the ability to understand what was happening by themselves.
That's true.
This was, for me, this was the worst, this was the worst thing I read in the, over the past 2 years. Or 2 weeks, excuse me.
Wow.
At least it dropped a little bit.
Yeah, no, not 2 years, 2 weeks.
I was like, damn.
This felt disjointed. The fact that they used two artists for the flashbacks, the normal thing.
I actually liked that for once, which is weird for me.
I liked that too.
Yeah, for me that was completely, like, part of the draw for the book for me was that Carlos Pachacco was going to be doing the art on it, and, you know, he had a legendary run on Captain Marvel with Rick Jones, and it felt disjointed. I didn't like the artwork at all. Like, I don't think that either of the art worked. I actually think the flashback art was probably better than Pachacco's, which is weird. It felt like a ploy to over-humanize a character so that they could raise the popularity level before the movie comes out. As opposed to telling, like, a heroic story, which is what I wanted from the character of Captain Marvel, especially after reading the previous run when they introduced her as Captain Marvel and not Miss Marvel anymore. It was about heroism, and this
was
just like about
too,
beating somebody down. And I don't need to read.
And reading her Infinity Stone one too, that was kind of,
yeah.
She was already had this shit slapped out of her.
Yeah, it's just like this is a continuation of just totally being brutal to a character. And Captain Marvel has been seemingly mishandled over the course of a few years, just constantly beating her down. I get it. I get that that's a storytelling device because then you can raise somebody up. But this, it separates her from the Avengers, which she's now supposed to be a core and, like, the strongest character. It felt like it was something that was a story that's just being told as a way to empathize. Like, we're going to create forced empathy as opposed to telling a good story.
Well, consider me ployed.
Yeah, right. That's kind of how I'm sitting here. I'm like, I'm going to read them all.
Go pick up the trade paperbacks for Captain Marvel, Earth Mightiest Hero.
Fair enough. Yes. See, for me...
And that's the thing we haven't
read
either.
For me, it's the exact opposite I have, because the only interactions I have with her as a character is in these big, like, cosmic space things where she's trying to punch ego
and
the living planet in the face,
I enjoy space.
You know, the hardest.
So.
And so I actually think that this was a really great, like, breath of fresh air as a character. I mean, I guess aside from her appearances in Miss Marvel, which are very, like, humanizing as well, but...
I think that the stuff that I've read of that handles her better, in my opinion.
Well, but, I mean... So I'm not going to get into how much I love G. Willow right now. but no, I actually really like this because I only ever see her, like I said, punching spaceships. So,
and I think that's also a mishandling. Like, this is the weird thing with the character is we either make her so overpowered that she's the Superman trope that people don't like, or this, which was so far end of the spectrum, it's like, it's okay to have middle ground, and it's okay to have characters who don't have these ridiculously tragic backstories and then take it one step further than that. I just, for me, this didn't land. And maybe something's wrong with me, but I don't know.
Everything's wrong with you, Nat. I'm just kidding.
That's
just
fair. Yeah.
Here.
And I don't normally, like, this is probably weird, too, for our listeners, because I don't usually dislike a lot of stuff.
No.
Like, I'm pretty yeah. adamantly, like, happy about things.
No, we normally don't really get, tear shit to pieces normally, but.
Interesting.
I enjoyed it. I'm probably going to read them all.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to continue with them.
I'm curious what they're doing.
I'm right. glad you guys enjoyed it.
All right. Well, to end on a happy note, I think we need to talk about The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman, number 6.
The end of the storyline.
I think we need to start off with the fact, at the very end of the comic, it literally says end of book 1.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know this is, like, bad to say about it, but that might have been my favorite part of the whole thing, because I read it, and I was like, is there going to be another, like, mini-run of this?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you going to do this again?
That's exactly my thought, too. I was like, yes, okay.
I'm reading it, I'm like, this is so good, okay. But it's the end. It's number 6. This is so good, but it's the number 6. Book 1?
Okay. Can we talk about good endings, too? The whole idea of Wonder Woman saying, that's it, I've had a fucking enough of this.
Oh, yeah.
And just she goes, just, and it's just and it's just literally one page. I'm going to use the bracelets and incinerate you as you try to incinerate me. Here you go. Done.
No, she just punches him in the face.
Well, then the next
star.
And then he's basically, I dare you.
He's like, that hurt. It was like a bully moment.
Right?
That hurt. And she's like, I've had this right here. I was like, oh.
I love that. And then this whole nonsense of just like surrounded by flame, you know? Which
oh
is
my like, God, are you kidding me?
This and is under my protection. Too. Then protect it. She's like, okay.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm gonna call your bluff, bitch.
Yeah, that whole sequence. It's like, there's not a lot happening in those two pages, yet it's unbelievable.
Well, do we have to talk about the catalyst of her saying, I've had fuck enough?
Yeah.
Which is, what the hell, I can't think of his name now.
Cyrano.
Cyrano.
Oh, my God. Was that not the most beautiful death sequence
ever?
Oh, my God.
He falls into flowers and his core. Like, this middle panel. I know you guys can't see this, and I apologize. You need to go and find this book.
Oh, yeah. Seriously.
But the middle panel is literally his body ephemerating into light and leaves.
Yep.
And you can start seeing, like, his rib cage, like, his skeletal structure in that.
And then
the next panel is his skull and ribs, like, his entire skeleton, bereft in leaves and flowers that are blowing away.
I would like to point out she's got, like, a Superman thing going on right here because she moved so fast. I'm like, I'm surprised she didn't break the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, right before that, there's, like, the three double splash pages of the epic battle.
Oh, yeah.
Are you kidding me? People at home, you need to go get this.
Even the Gotham sequence where Batman is in the Batwing and the bright lights are shining through the mist, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Just, oh, God. Yeah. And, yeah, the border artwork, like the gutter.
I'm sorry. That's the cutest little baby.
Oh, the baby Cyrano.
That's the baby, the cutest baby I've ever seen.
And this is what I was talking about earlier.
Little horns.
As much as I love Jorge Jimenez's artwork on Justice League, the best artist on Wonder Woman in recent years is Liam Sharp.
That's because he's Liam Sharp. I don't even know what
that
is.
Something
that
he does with the boot design and the way that it works and like.
Well,
it's just,
even specifically, like, my girlfriend loves New 52 Wonder Woman.
Me too.
But this, she's like, she looks really, really cool in this. I'm like, I know.
She looks so powerful and like, there's just. Okay, we're just gushing. Basically, like,
I was like reading this. I'm like,
and
how
also,
do you make death in blood look so
not only
pretty?
Wonder
I
Woman,
hang this up in my house. And
not only
just,
Wonder
like,
Woman, but
scene.
Liam Sharp is the best artist on Batman's list.
On Batman's
oh
list.
Oh my God! Yeah, you're
sexy
right.
Sexy Batman all over the place.
Can we just take a minute to look at
appreciate
that close up of his face?
That page is gorgeous. Like, there's this weird alien tech in the page, and then utilizing the yellow border, which I absolutely love on the Batman symbol, but to be that silhouetted area that you basically have no information for.
I wonder if that's why
Batman.
I get so comfortable with this Batman. I'm like, he's so pretty.
He does remind me. He's like a weird Kilmer and Keaton Cross.
I could see that too. That might be what it is.
The
the creature in the last page?
The end, on the very last page, the reveal of what Baylor was going for in the very end. Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing, is he's like, you know...
Beautiful, but terrifying.
Beautiful, but terrifying. And it looks like a living mountain thing.
So terrifying that the entire nation would damn itself to an eternity of captivity. We have to hope, I suppose, that we never find out. And then it says end of book one, and I was like, I get more!
I know, and then, like, I just hope it doesn't take too long to get more, you know? Like, that's...
It's like another hit.
We know his next project, so...
Yeah, right?
Like, I mean, they can...
Okay, and also, once again, this is Gush... Is this not one of the greatest covers to a comic book of all time?
I might actually have to hang these up in my house. It's just, everything's so pretty.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting like a Star Wars.
Right, it's definitely that.
Which is the movie poster episode.
It's episode 4, I think. It's the original.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Yeah.
It's definitely that, like, Drew Strozen cover.
I just...
All right.
It was a great series. It was super pretty, and we get more. That's basically the gist of it.
Yes, we talked for a long time today, so we're going to... I think we're calling it.
Otherwise, we're just going to keep talking about how pretty it is.
Read some good stuff. There's a lot out there.
All right, well, let's say goodbye then, everyone.
Bye! Bye.